Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, I really hope you guys enjoy the awesome new intro to the show. That will be the new intro to the show now, from now on. We had a great opportunity to work with a brother who did this for nothing at all, and I couldn't pass it up. Brother Bill has a most amazing voice, and he's actually a past District Deputy Grand Master and an amazing ritualist as well, and I can't thank him enough for doing that for us in this program. So right away, just want to again remind everybody before we get started about Brothers Blend Coffee. What is Brothers Blend Coffee? Well, it's a coffee that is roasted by Red Barn Coffee Roasters in Hopkinson, Mass., and it is put together by the Brothers of Montgomery Lodge in Milford, Massachusetts. And they offer three blends: Adoniram's Brew, which is really robust, Harmony Roast, which is medium, and Tyler's Cup, which is smooth, right? So these three come together under Brothers Blend Coffee brand, which is sold by Montgomery Lodge on their website, brothersblendcoffee.com. And it is to provide the very finest in coffee to the brethren wheresoever dispersed, their friends, families, and colleagues. And it's a fundraiser for the charitable causes and activities and maintenance of Montgomery Lodge. So they have sent me some of this coffee, and they helped us out with production of this program for several episodes. And it's only right that we let people know about this great coffee. They've done everybody on this show a great favor by producing several episodes. And because of that, do them a favor and help them out a little bit. They are bringing you Masonic education, and let them give you coffee. The coffee is really, really good. I enjoy it. I have it every morning. It is sold in 12-ounce bags, and the bags retail for $12.79 per 12-ounce bag. So if you buy only one bag, it's $4 to ship. 2 to 3 bags is $6 to ship, and 4 to 6 bags is $12 to ship. So basically, I mean, if you're a real coffee drinker, or you just want large quantities of coffee available, maybe for your lodge, definitely contact the webmaster here, the customer inquiries at sales@brothersblendcoffee.com, because they're doing discounts on large orders for junior wardens. And we all know that the plight of the junior warden is ice and coffee. Hey, can you pick up some ice? Hey, can you pick up some coffee? And also Masonic caterers. So they're ready to work with you guys on prices and stuff. So please just check them out. Again, brothersblendcoffee.com, right out of Milford, Massachusetts. So last week we talked with Frater O about the third degree. We started off pretty normal conversations of what we could talk about within the construct of the third degree. And then we went really deep, and we kind of went all over the place, and it got crazy, and it came back. And those are always my favorite kind of conversations, because I learn so much, Frater O learns, and hopefully you guys pick up some stuff too that you guys will really enjoy knowing and learning, and maybe spreading the word. So please do spread the word about this program, rate it on iTunes, all that good stuff. And with that, I just want to say thanks again for listening to this program. You guys make it what it is. And let's get right into the first paper of the week. So the first piece is called The Perfect Cubit, Masonic Legend or Fable. And right after this paper, we are going to go into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. It's hard to believe, but we have been doing the Masonic Minute. This is episode 25, bi-weekly, and brother Steve pointed out that this is a whole year of the Masonic Minute. So please say congrats to brother Stephen L. Harrison for his hard work in delivering a whole year of these episodes. It isn't easy to do, especially when you're doing what he does, and that's putting together videos to go along with these that we're able to put up on our Whence Came You page. They're up on his page, and occasionally we stick them as the bonus feature in the app when we have the extra bandwidth. So again, many thanks to Stephen L. Harrison. But let's get into the paper. The Perfect Cubit, Masonic Legend or Fable, by Lloyd U. Jefferson, past Grand Master. Dedicated to the loving memory of Reverend and Brother John Henry Powers, in his earlier years a stonemason by trade, he founded the Powers Memorial Baptist Church, served with distinction on the Virginia State Baptist Mission Board, member of the Old Town Lodge No. 68 AF and AM, Galax, Virginia, Masonic scholar and master teacher, exemplary Mason, and cherished friend, 1870 to 1961. Masonry. The more it is examined, the more beautiful it becomes. This paper, which I have prepared, howsoever imperfect, is an attempt to explore the origin of the perfect cubit. It is my prayer that it may induce others, having more extensive means of information and time for elaborate research, to accept the challenge. Admittedly, the existence of the perfect cubit has neither historical authority nor logical possibility to support it. It was first implanted in my mind by Reverend and Brother John Henry Powers, my wife's grandfather, for whom I had the greatest respect and admiration in all the years I had the privilege of sharing his friendship and Masonic knowledge. This paper is dedicated to his loving memory, to his intelligence, and his profound influence on my life. He truly exemplified the greatest teachings of Freemasonry. While I come from a Masonic family, including my father, father-in-law, a number of uncles, and other relatives, I suppose Reverend Powers was the one singular person who most influenced my decision to petition Freemasonry. Then, in 1946, following by being raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason, our warm relationship blossomed and grew with each passing year. I treasure the countless evenings I spent with him in his study as he discussed with me the origins and ageless teachings of Freemasonry. He was a Masonic scholar, possessing the keen mind of a master teacher. Born in 1870, he was one of the great evangelistic Baptist preachers who rode horseback over the dirt roads of Kentucky and Virginia preaching the gospel. This man of God was a member of Old Town Lodge No. 68 at Galax, Virginia, and when I became a Mason, he was 76 years of age. During one of our many sessions together, he expounded on the building of King Solomon's Temple. It was his belief, which I share, that the origin of Masonry took place at the building of King Solomon's Temple, and that King Solomon was the first Grand Master and Hiram of Tyre, and Hiram Abiff as his wardens. Dr. James Anderson accepts this legend in the second edition of his Constitutions. When he says that King Solomon was a Grand Master of all Masons at Jerusalem, Hiram, King of Tyre, was Grand Master at Tyre, and Hiram Abiff, in Solomon's absence, filled the chair as Deputy Grand Master, and in his presence was Senior Grand Warden. Moreover, Reverend George Oliver in Antiquities of Freemasonry said these periods occupy a space of 3,000 years, and I have selected them for illustration, because it is generally believed that Masonry took its rise at the building of King Solomon's Temple. Reverend Powers spoke of Solomon's Temple recruiting over 150,000 stonemasons, hewers of timber, artificers of previous metals, laborers and overseers from all over the land, many speaking in strange tongues, making communication difficult. Chapter 2, Second Book of Chronicles, relates how Solomon numbered all of the strangers who were in the land of Israel, after the numbering wherewith David his father had numbered them, and they were found 150,000 and 3,600, and he set 70,000 of them to be bearers of burden, and 80,000 to be hewers in the mountain, and 3,600 overseers to set the people to work. Grandfather Powers' reflection on the monumental task that was Solomon's to meld such a huge body of workmen, sorting out their various talents and abilities, and organizing them into an effective and harmonious workforce to commence building the temple. Yet perhaps Solomon's greatest problem, Reverend Powers suggested, was a lack of a uniform measure of length by which stones, timbers, and other materials could be joined with accuracy. He spoke of the cubit, which was used as a measure of length by the Hebrews, Egyptians, and Babylonians, being the distance from the elbow to the extremity of the middle finger, or approximately 18 inches. Understandably, the cubit would vary by physical size of the workman or overseer, and thus precluding the use of exact measure. World Book Encyclopedia states that generally the cubit was the length of a man's forearm from his elbow to the tip of his middle finger. The cubit of ancient Egyptians was about 21 inches long. That of the ancient Romans was 17.5 inches. The Jewish cubit was 22 inches. Coyle, in his Masonic Encyclopedia, says that the cubit was a measure used by the Hebrews, the exact length of which has been subject of much uncertainty and dispute. The majority opinion is that the length of the forearm and hand from the elbow to the extremity of the middle finger was approximately 18 inches. The Egyptian common cubit was 17.72 inches, the Egyptian royal cubit was 20.67 inches, and the Roman Attic cubit was 17.57 inches. Marcingill, editor of the Philalethes Society, said according to Bishop Cumberland, the Hebrew cubit was 21 inches, but according to all other authorities, it was approximately 18 inches. The kinds of cubits were known, the sacred, 36, and the profane, 18. The measurements given in the Bible about Solomon's temple are all based on the profane or common cubit. Mackey's Revised Encyclopedia refers to Hassan's Dictionary of the Bible, page 967, quote, "We have at present no means of asserting the exact dimensions of the Hebrews' ordinary and royal cubits. The balance of evidence is certainly in favor of the very close approximation to the Egyptian system," end quote. The Maryland Master Mason Handbook declares that it is of great interest that archaeological research has revealed that in Solomon's day there were three different cubits: a land cubit, which was used for plotting the layout of temples, courts, and the surrounding terrace, which had a length of about 17.6 inches, a building cubit, used in the erection of buildings, was about 14.4 inches, and a gold cubit, used in the construction of the gold and silver vessels and decorative work, which was equal to about 10.8 inches. All these three are found to be multiples of the basic palm breadth of 3.6 inches, which was used by the Babylonians and also the Hebrews. Amid all of the confusion about a unit of measure, especially finding one which was uniform and dependable, Reverend Powers said that the ancient workmen of the temple fashioned a rope of human hair which was knotted at 3, 5, and 7 cubits. The human hair was chosen because it was unaffected by heat or cold and thus maintained a constant length. He called this, quote-unquote, the perfect cubit, which enabled the workmen to join the stones, timbers, and other materials with accuracy. In Oliver's Antiquities, he said, quote, "The structure thus begun according to a plan given to Solomon by David his father upon the Ark of Alliance, every energy was used to render it a perfect specimen of art. Every stone, every piece of timber was carved, marked, and numbered in the quarry and in the forest, and nothing remained for the workmen at Jerusalem but to join the materials with precision on a reference to the marks and numbers. This was effected without the use of either axe, hammer, or metal tool, so that nothing was heard at Zion save harmony and peace," end quote. It is a real testimonial to the ancient craftsmen that the parts could be so shaped at great distance and fit as they were intended. Grandfather Powers contended that this was due in part to the use of the perfect cubit. I have reflected many times upon the significance of the three knots in the perfect cubit, 3, 5, and 7. Mackey, in his History, Volume 1, referred to the symbolic character of those sacred numbers in the teachings of our ancient art and science, 3, 5, and 7. In the same spirit of symbolic reference, the steps of the winding stairs leading to the middle chamber were divided into a series of 3, 5, and 7. I said it at the onset of this paper that the existence of the perfect cubit has no historical authority. None surfaced during my research. Again, Mackey in Volume 1, page 9, states, "For a faithful and thorough inquiry of the history of Freemasonry, carefully separate the two periods into which it may be naturally divided, the historic and the prehistoric. The historic is a period within which we have genuine documents in references to the existence of the order. The prehistoric is the period within which we have no such records and where we have to depend wholly upon legends and traditions." In the preface to Mackey's History, page 7, Robert Ingham Clegg reflected that Brother Mackey, pointing out that the very age of the Masonic institution had tended to confuse mere traditions or legends with the authentic truths of history, and he welcomed light from all directions, but carefully applied critical standards to the source and standing of the information that came his way. By no means was he ready to reject a Masonic legend as fable. So I leave it up to the Masonic scholars and prominent historians, eminently more qualified than I, to determine whether the perfect cubit is a Masonic legend or fable. Now, from 2 Corinthians, quote, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect, be good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace shall be with you," End quote. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that paper. Again, that one will be in our show extras in the app, which is available through the podcast source for free. So please do check that out. And with that, let's get right into this week's Masonic Minute with Brother Stephen L. Harrison.
It's time for a little Masonic trivia. Here are 15 things you may not know about your fraternity and your brothers. Brother Jimmy Doolittle earned the Congressional Medal of Honor flying missions to Japan, able to go that distance only by high-octane aviation fuel he had himself invented. The Liberty Bell cracked while tolling the death of Chief Justice John Marshall, past Grand Master of Virginia. A Masonic Lodge, Henry Knox Lodge of Massachusetts, was constituted on the ship USS Constitution, also known as Old Ironsides, on March 17, 1926. The military bugle call Taps, written by Brother Daniel Adams Butterfield, was originally called Butterfield's Lullaby. Abraham Lincoln petitioned the Masonic Lodge in Springfield, Illinois, but did not join, thinking it would look like he was doing so for political purposes. Brother Richard Gatling invented the Gatling gun, believing it was such a terrible weapon, fear of using it would actually save lives. Brother Charles Lindbergh, known for his historic flight across the Atlantic, once had his picture on the cover of Time magazine for inventing what was called an artificial heart. Brother Harlan Sanders started his huge Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise empire with nothing more than a single Social Security check. All four presidential candidates in 1948, Republican Thomas Dewey, Progressive Henry Wallace, Dixiecrat Strom Thurmond, and the eventual winner, Democrat Harry Truman, were Freemasons. From its founding as a state in 1890 until the mid-20th century, every governor of Wyoming was, with one exception, a Freemason. That exception was Nellie Taylor Ross, the first woman governor in the United States, a member of the Eastern Star. In 1953, the Grand Chaplain of the Grand Lodge of Texas was a brother named Hiram Abiff Boaz. Gerrymandering, the rearranging of voting districts mainly for political purposes, is named for Brother Elbridge Gerry, 5th Vice President of the United States. Brother Charles P. Chick Sale once wrote a best-selling book about outhouses. The oldest building in the United States built specifically for masonry is Mason's Hall on Franklin Street in Richmond, Virginia. It was saved from destruction during the Civil War because Union troops guarded it, ordered to do so by a general who was a Mason. And finally, did you know there is only one city in the world known to be purposely laid out on a Masonic theme? You think it's Washington, D.C.? Think again. In 1816, Hector Kilbourne, a surveyor and member of Master of Science Lodge No. 50, laid out the original plat of Sandusky, Ohio. He designed the city on a grid of equal-sized squares and rectangles representing an open Bible with a square and compasses located in the center. He named many of the streets after famous Freemasons. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, as usual, amazing stuff from Brother Stephen L. Harrison, who works tirelessly for Masonry and has some great books out there. If you guys can catch a copy of it, Freemasons at Oak Island is a great book. It's a shorter book, and it goes great with the seasons of the Oak Island show on History Channel, actually. Secondly, he does have another great book called Freemasons, Tales from the Craft, which is another excellent book. It is chock full of amazing little intro stories that will actually help you get further into those stories if you so choose to. He's left a great deal of inspiration within that book. So next, let's go into the next paper. All right, the next piece I have for you is called An Ennobling Science. And to be honest with you, I can't remember if I read this paper on the show before. But it's pretty good, and out of 228 episodes, it might be okay to repeat this one. So it's called, again, An Ennobling Science, and it comes from The Masonic Craftsman, 1938. Freemasonry has its bitter enemies and its doubting despisers. There are some who have formed the opinion that it was created as a substitute for religion, whereas it is only the handmaid to her fair graces. Others presume the labors of Masons are trifling, absurd mysteries or profane mummeries, whereas there is no subject existing within the range and grasp of the human intellect into which the science of Freemasonry does not enter in the pursuit of wisdom and knowledge. Some ridicule the secrets of Freemasons, declaring them to be either hurtful to society or wrong in themselves, whereas those secrets are bonds of their mutual fidelity, by which they pledge themselves to, quote-unquote, trace wisdom and follow virtue. Time was when the members of the craft were denounced as dangerous, and every man of eminence known to be a Mason was called upon to renounce his connection with the other social activities. But in the face of all opposition, the fraternity remained calm, and the sun of Masonry has dispersed the clouds, which darkened her skies so long. Without territorial possessions, without any other coercing power titan that of morality and virtue, Freemasonry has survived the wreck of mighty empires and resisted the destroying hand of time. No other institution can be compared with it. Every other society sinks into insignificance when placed by the side of Masonry, Christianity alone excepted. Like Gray's virtuous peasant, Freemasonry keeps the noiseless tenure of its way and rejoices in the unsullied happiness of doing good. When did Freemasonry first begin to exist, and why has the institution been thus preserved? Mason's work began with the creation. To understand the measures of weight and light and sound, to unravel, seize upon, and comprehend those unchanging laws by which the earth, the sun, the moon, the planets are sustained in space, to follow up the changes of seasons, and, in every step of the investigation, as the intellect climbed from lofty truths to truths still more lofty, to pause in profound admiration, to feel the Creator close to the creature, and to adore. This was the first aim of Masonry. This, its task, ever fresh, never ended, a science teeming with new results, adding incentive after incentive to praise and glorify the grand architect of the universe. Freemasonry has been preserved because it instructs its members to worship their almighty maker, to honor and obey the sovereign of the country, to be peaceful in their stations, diligent in their callings, honest in their dealings, respectful toward their superiors, gentle and condescending to their inferiors, merciful toward their enemies, kind and obliging in all the duties of their common life. Such is the institution which has been preserved to the world, unlimited in its numbers and scattered over every land and kingdom. The work of the fraternity today is to be true to the original character of the order, to continue to follow the God of nature through all the wonderful variety of his works, and to keep the silence and observe the sacred rules imposed upon the craft. It might be said by some scoffer, if Masonry be such a pure and ennobling science, should not all Masons be wise and good and temperate and self-denying, full of piety and good words? The answer is that the fitness of any system is not to be tried and condemned because of unworthiness in some. If any man has been led by impatient curiosity, without higher motive, to place unhallowed feet to the tessellated pavement. If any, has turned the hallowed purposes of masonry into a mere convivial meeting, if any has been content with merely acquiring superficial acquaintances with the craft, let not the system itself be charged with their perversions, their sins, or their folly. An unworthy brother would perhaps have been a worse man if he had not been a mason. Again, that is The Masonic Craftsman, originally published in 1938. And now we'll take a quick break to pay the bills. So how do we keep this show going? Of course, we have a few ways for you to do that. So if you visit www.wcypodcast.com and you click on the limited edition shop, you're going to see lapel pins, cufflinks, tie bars, and money clips. And we have sold out of our button pins for now and our books. However, these four items that we offer are in a good quantity, with the exception of the tie bars. I believe I have two tie bars left. I have less than 5 sets of cufflinks left, and I think I've got about 10 money clips left. So I know the money clips, that they move a lot slower. Not a lot of people use money clips anymore. I myself find them inconvenient. However, they do make a nice gift. So if you pick up any of those things, the money that we make from those goes right into the hosting costs of the show. It goes into our PayPal account, which the podcast hosters pull the money right out of there. So I keep all my hands out of it. Basically, you buy pins, I send you pins, and that's how we do it. The other way you can help support is by clicking on the support the show link, which when you do that, of course, there are some cool links here to onnit.com, where you can buy Alpha Brain, which is probably my favorite vitamin ever. It's a nootropic vitamin, which means it's got a lot of good vitamins in there for your brain. There's no caffeine at all. Razor focus. I find myself better at really paying attention to things that I have to keep my focus on. Specifically, I deal with numbers all day. I'm an analyst, so it's numbers all day long, right? And I'm just looking at lines and lines and lines of numbers in Excel. How do I stay focused? Well, lots of coffee, but also I like Alpha Brain very much. So check that out. If you click our link, you'll get 10% off, and they will give a little bit back to this show. Increased focus, all natural, not even dyes in the capsules. It's vegan approved. It can help out with lucid dreaming if you're into that, and heightened awareness, all without caffeine. So it's pretty cool. Aside from that, you can also head on over to freemasonryart.com. If you use the promo code WCY, you'll get 10% off there as well. And Brother Juan Sepulveda will send a little bit back to this show. And of course, our main sponsor right now is Brothers Blend Coffee. So please check out brothersblendcoffee.com. You heard me talk about it at the top of the show. It's really good stuff. Please check it out. All right, now we're going to go into this week's famous Freemason. This week's famous Freemason is John Elmer, or Jack Carson. He was born October 27th, 1910, and he passed away on January 2nd, 1963. He was a Canadian-born, American-based film actor. He was one of the most popular characters during the golden age of Hollywood, with a film career spanning the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Though he was primarily used in supporting roles for comic relief, his work in films such as Mildred Pierce in 1945 and The Cat on the Hot Tin Roof in 1958 displayed his mastery of a straight dramatic actor role as well. He worked on RKO and MGM, and he was cast opposite Myra Loy and William Powell in Love Crazy. But most of his memorable work was for Warner Brothers. His trademark character was the wisecracking know-it-all, typically and inevitably undone by his own smug cockiness. Jack Carson was, again, a well-known actor, and he was the first of 5 candidates to receive the Entered Apprentice degree at Cecil Daylight Lodge, number 305 in Independence, Missouri, in 1936. He was taught the proficiency while the other 4 candidates were being initiated, and by his request, he then returned his Entered Apprentice proficiency that same evening, examining himself, and it is said he gave a perfect proficiency. So there you go. Pretty cool. I don't know if that would fly today, being able to examine yourself, but in all aspects, that's a really cool anecdote, and I found that actually through the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry's Northern Masonic Jurisdictions Facebook page. So they post a famous Freemason almost every day. When I can't find somebody on the web, I head on over there to check and see what they've got, and we keep a running list so we don't repeat these guys too often. I have in the past, which was phenomenal to me, that in 200 episodes, I think I repeated 6 guests, or 6 famous Freemasons, so not too bad. that, I guess. But with that, we're going to close it out this week. I hope you guys all have an amazing week ahead of you. Get ready for next week with Fratero. It's going to be a really fun conversation. Again, get on Facebook.com and find Fratero, F-R-A-T-E-R space O, and like the page. He's going to announce the subject matter for next week's program, and I think you guys will all get really stoked. It's going to be a fun conversation. We'll go deep, we'll go all over the place, but it'll be really fun, as usual. If you have any questions, comments, please don't hesitate to email me at admin@wcypodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook, follow on Twitter, @WhenceCameU. Don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 great articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you followed my last piece, The Caretaker, Part 1, about an apron, we're going to have a nice follow-up article to that coming up next week. I think you really enjoy it. It's another part in The Caretaker series, where I basically look around my office and find something to write about, which has a unique story, and it's a lot of fun, and I actually get to research a little bit on some of the history of some of the odd things I've collected in my short time in the craft. So please do check those out. Again, don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable going live at 10, 9 Central every Tuesday. And last week we talked about faith. This week we're going to be talking about hope. So if you're listening to this on Sunday night, this Tuesday, hope, as it relates to faith, hope, and charity. And the week after that, we'll be talking about charity. So it should be a great show, tremendous talent on that show, and a great knowledge base with the other 4 hosts. You know, they say that if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room. Well, when I'm in the room with those guys, I am definitely in the right room. So knowledgeable, and just a great bunch of guys. So I hope you guys check that out. And I just want to take a quick moment to welcome back home, anyway. Brother Brian Shimian, the Midnight Freemason, is back in Illinois. And I got to have lunch with him just a week and a half ago, and it was so amazing. So, brother, if you're listening, super stoked you're back in town. In fact, he's at a meeting tonight that I was going to go to, but instead I stayed home with the kids and we watched Harry Potter Part 2, Chamber of Secrets. So we had a lot of fun. I hope you guys are having a lot of fun with your families, too. It's cold, it's wintry. Everybody in Washington, D.C., I hope you don't get too much snow. They're calling for it like crazy. It's supposed to be snowing like gangbusters, 2 feet. But I hope you guys are all stay safe and warm, and I hope you cuddle up with a Masonic book and your families and you stay safe. So with that, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
Been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.